Blog Talk Radio.
It's time for a solid hour of Tea Party Power. And now, here's Janine Garofalo's favorite tea-bagging redneck, Mark Gillar.
Welcome to the Tea Party Power Hour, and what a special show we have for you today. We have Reverend C.L. Bryant, the founder of One Nation Back to God, with us. I want to thank the people at Blog Talk Radio for making us one of the picks of the day. I know you've got more than 1,000 shows a day to choose from, and we are honored to be one of only 4 picks of the day for Blog Talk Radio. Now on to our guest, Reverend Bryant, as I said, is the founder of One Nation Back to God. He's been a gospel minister since the 70s. He is the former president of the NAACP chapter in Garland, Texas, where he eventually left due to his pro-life views. He is easily one of the most recognized names in the Tea Party movement. In fact, he hosted his own radio show, Hot Tea Radio, often referred to by many people as the runaway slave. Please help me welcome Reverend C.L. Bryant. C.L., welcome to the show.
Thank you, Mark, for having me on, and hello to all of you out there in Blog Talk. And it's a great day in the USA.
Absolutely. Absolutely. We've got you here for a lot of reasons today, but one of the most important is this movie that you have under development, and that is the movie Runaway Slave. Why don't we start out by having you tell our listeners a little bit about this project and how they can get involved?
Thank you for that, Mark. We are in production of Runaway Slave movie. It's a docu-movie that encourages all Americans to flee economic slavery and run toward the blessings of liberty that's guaranteed by our Constitution. One of the targets, of course, are black conservatives in this country, but, of course, we encourage all Americans to understand that this form of slavery, tyranny, will, in fact, be colorblind. And it can enslave us all if we don't pay attention to it. The concept is one that I've had for a while, and I'm glad that I was able to persuade Luke Livingston, Ground Floor Productions, to in Atlanta to help me put it together, along with Freedom Works in Washington.
Now, I've watched some pretty amazing YouTube videos of you speaking, and you are encouraging Americans to run away from the tyranny of progressivism, the tyranny of socialism. Talk to me about how that particular political philosophy is holding people in bondage, in slavery to the state, even now in the year 2010.
Let me give you an idea, Mark. The Judeo-Christian principle, this is a factually, is one of the reasons why other religions like Islam and anyone else have their freedoms in this country because they are religions of tolerance. We have been a very tolerant nation of other people coming here, whether they believe in a God or not, it does not matter. However, whenever we veer toward a more socialist form of governing ourselves, then immediately the very building blocks and the very mechanism that give everyone else their freedom is trampled upon. And if you look at the progressive nature of socialism, the one thing it does want to do is stifle Christianity and Judeo-Christians. But it is one thing to offer freedom. It is another thing to make those who give your freedom second-class citizens. And that's one thing Americans will not tolerate.
I would tend to agree with you, and I think it's that unwillingness to tolerate that is firing up the Tea Party movement. You are easily one of the most recognizable figures in the Tea Party movement. I know you're in high demand as a speaker across the country. You participated in the 9/12 rally. But I have one question for you. I mean, being a black American, how do you tolerate all that racism that you must have to put up with every time you go to a Tea Party? Because if you listen to the mainstream media, the Tea Party is nothing but a party of angry old white men who are also racist.
Well, this is what I have found in the year and a half now that I've been involved with Tea Party. From April 15th last year in Shreveport-Bossier, Louisiana, and then in Washington, D.C. last year when I spoke at the first 9/12 movement before 1.5 million people, to this year, I was proud to be associated with them then, and I am proud to be associated with them now. And the reason for that is because our core principles are the same. Now, as I have said to many a news reporter from CNN to Fox, what you see as far as people bringing signs of protest against the president, many times that sometimes the sign may be racist. But if you look at a riot, Mark, that happens in the inner city, the person they'll put on the television to represent or to tell about that riot most likely will be the most toothless, ignorant person they can possibly find for television. And many times when the liberal media will go after the Tea Party, they do the same thing. They do the same hatchet job on the Tea Party. They'll find the least desirable representative of our Tea Party. They won't come to me. They won't come to Matt Kibbe or Jenny Beth Martin or Mark or any of those type of people. They will find something that they know will be sensationalized. But the truth of the matter is Tea Partiers all around the country are the salt of the earth. And if the truth be known, there are many black people who are, in fact, of the same slant and believe the same things. However, what I'm trying to do is tear down the wall that separate us by color and help us blend because of our principles as Americans.
And that is fantastic work that you're doing. You know, your point about the media going after the least desirable representative is well taken. In fact, Jeff Foxworthy has this joke, you know, he has that series, How to Tell If You're a Redneck, and he said, if you've been on TV more than once to tell the news people what the tornado sounded like when it hit the trailer park, you know.
We all know that guy, right? We all know those guys who they put on TV. But God bless them. You know, Mark, they make fun of us. I don't know if you're originally from the South, but my roots run deep into Louisiana. And we all have those people in our families. We all know those people. And God bless them. You know, we're not making fun of them, but that's a part of our culture here. We're just straightforward type people. But I will say this. I do believe that the revolution in America that will lead us back to the core principles of our founding fathers and what was desired for this country will come from the South.
Oh, I agree with you 100%. I'm a native Texan, and my grandfather, my maternal grandfather, grew up near New Orleans, earned money for his family by selling newspapers on the streets of New Orleans as a little boy there in the French Quarter. So, the South is very, very important to me, and I'm certainly not pitching one of those "the South will rise again" slogans.
It does, Mark. It will rise in a good way, and one of the reasons why, and I know we might be veering from the topic, but if we can get back to it, because what we are going to do with this film is travel the Underground Railroad where slaves actually escaped to freedom. And that started in the South around Atlanta, and but the greatest, one of the biggest slave ports was in New Orleans. Now, I bring all that up for this reason, There is no other place in this country where people understand America and each other than here in the South. Why? Because we have come through a common background. We eat the same foods. We believe basically the same things as far as God is concerned. We have work ethics that are the same. I'm talking about black and white people. However, you don't find these types of things in the North. And I do believe that if there is an honest discussion that will ever come in this country about race, it must happen now, and it will come from the South, because we've been having this discussion, whether we knew it or not, for many, many years.
Indeed we have. You know, I got to tell you, CL, as a young boy in school reading about slavery, reading about the Civil War, I often found myself wishing, perhaps I'm a bit of an anachronism, but I found myself wishing that I had been there. I found myself wishing that I could have fought for the freedom of slaves. I found myself wishing that I could have helped slaves escape bondage. I found myself wishing that I could have been part of the Underground Railroad. And what I'm seeing today is that, as you've pointed out, there are many people, not just black, but also white and Hispanic and Asian, who are still in slavery, who do still have those chains. But instead of being chained to the plantation, they are chained to the state. They are being bound not by physical chains, but by welfare and government handouts and a mentality that says you will never be anything on your own, so you just keep eating and living on the government dime and voting the way we tell you to, and everything is going to be okay. But
absolutely.
I would argue,
and the race pimps, yeah, as I call them, the race pimps like Al Sharpton and Jesse Jackson, they have actually made a living off of making the downtrodden, whether they're women, whether they're Asians or Hispanics or blacks, like you said, focus on the ineptness or the things that have happened to them that keep them down, rather than the things that are available to them that they can pull themselves up. And so when you look at them, at the race pimps, as I call them, these men are wealthy men. Many of them have never had a secular job. They've lived off of the government themselves. And so naturally, the progression would be to keep a core group of people on the government dole. And believe it or not, they are paid by white liberals to perform that particular function, so that when it is time to mobilize a block of voters to the polls, they have one that is already built in the black and poor community. Because here in Louisiana, as most of you know out there that may be listening, Katrina revealed a lot of things to us, the hurricane. Those same voters who were trapped in that area of the Ninth Ward there in New Orleans were usually picked up by bus to be taken to the polls when it was time to vote by Mary Landrieu, Democrat, by Ray Nagin, Democrat, and by Kathleen Blanco, who was the governor of our state, Democrat, at that particular time. And all three of these are liberals. Now, those same buses who took them to the polls stood idle when the storm was still 2 or 3 days out. And so the storm hits, and these people are trapped there, couldn't leave. But who do they blame for that ineptness? They don't blame state and local government that should have come to their rescue and should have gotten them out of there. They blame George Bush. Now, truly, perhaps the president responded a little bit late to that, but it was not his fault that that happened to that group of people. But Al Sharpton and that type of group, Jesse Jackson, they would have you believe that.
I have, well, first of all, the liberals have taken the blame Bush thing just completely out of control. I mean, we've all heard Blaine Bush ad nauseum, and I always found it interesting that you had a liberal mayor, Nagin, and a liberal governor, all Democrats, and yet the mainstream media pretty much held them blameless.
That's right.
And in fact, in a particular bit of irony, I think Mayor Nagin is now renting himself out as a disaster relief consultant or something. So.
Isn't that funny? That is.
Yeah.
And I tell you something too about it, Mark, is that one of the reasons, though, I'm so glad and proud to be a part of the Tea Party is because, and that's a movement that is nationwide, and most liberals think that the Tea Party is just one face, but it's many faces in many states across our country. But we have shed light on another inept liberal, and that is the one that, I don't know if you cast your vote for him or not, but that's the one that occupies 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue. The media had given him a pass from the very time that he gave his speech at the Democrat National Convention three or four years ago now. They had given him a pass up until about 6 months ago when the Tea Party actually began to throw people out of office, when the power of the grassroots movement actually began to throw people out of office, we began to wake folks up to the fact that this man did not, does not, and cannot walk on water. In fact, he is not qualified to be president of the United States.
Well, let's talk about his background a little bit, because as I approached the 2008 election, there were things in his background that really bothered me. His connection with people like Tony Rezko, his connection with people like Bill Ayers and Bernadine Dorn, and those things really bothered me. His comment that we needed an American civilian peacekeeping force that was as large and well-funded as the United States military. His promise to community organizers like Acorn that he was going to bring them into the White House and allow them to set policy. I mean, there were all these, his promise that his cap-and-trade program was going to cause electric bills to skyrocket and coal mining companies to go bankrupt. Those are things that would have sent off enormous warning bells for most candidates, yet for him, they did not. Why do you think that was not noticed?
He got a pass because the liberals were wanting to make a historical vote. And I want us to watch one thing here. And unfortunately, what happened, I voted for W twice, but unfortunately what happened, he got caught up, of course, in the war but when we were attacked here by these terrorists. And I really would like to address that here a little bit later if we have the time. But the president, the former president, George W., began to spend a lot of money that he should not have spent. And then he called McCain and then Senator Obama off of the campaign trail to sign on to TARP. And some of us knew, and Rick Santelli sounded the alarm that this meant that somebody, whoever became president, would have to sustain that. And so that actually began the effect for Obama to come in and put more on us, and in fact quadruple the problem by pushing stimulus package. But when this president was on the campaign trail, this is the one red flag that all of us should have seen and did not recognize when he said that he was going to, in 5 days, fundamentally change the country. Now, Mark, I don't know if you're married, but I've been married for 36 years to my wife. 4 children, 8 grandchildren later, I do not in any way, and I would not say in any way, that Jane, I want you to fundamentally change. That just would not fly. And so when we're talking about our country, the country that has afforded, yes, we've come across a great trial in this country. We have overcome great adversity in this country, but yet we remain. We are the greatest success story, I believe, Mark, that the world has ever known. In, you name it, whatever it is, and in, particularly in race relations, when you understand that just 130 years ago, 137 years ago, I was a slave, or my grandparents were slaves, but here I am, the son of former slaves in this country, a part of one of the greatest grassroots movements in this country, and there is nothing in this country that my skin color, and if you know of anything that with my skin color would stop me from achieving in this country in the year 2010, Mark, I want you to tell me about it. I don't know what it is.
I don't know what it is either. In fact, the mere fact that we have a president of the United States who's African-American tells me that anything is achievable and that skin color will not get in your way. I mean, Obama himself is proof positive of that.
Absolutely. And so that is the one thing that bewilders me about people who will not go out and do it, capture the American dream. Someone was asking the other day, is the American dream dead? No, it is not. It is alive and well, but it will be dead if we do not act on November 2nd and then pay close attention to those people that we vote in on November 3rd. And from that point on, and every elected official that may hear this program or come to your tea parties or what have you, Mark, this is a stern message that I give to each and every one of those guys who want to hold political office in our state, local government, and in our national government. We may vote you in, but you need to know one thing. We are watching you.
Absolutely, and I think there are at least five or six GOP machine candidates who didn't make it past the primaries who now understand that.
That's right. That's right. And the American people are very much awake now. We've been called all types of names, bigots, racist, in my case, Uncle Tom's. But they can call us whatever they want. At the end of the day, call us patriots. And the fact of the matter is we love this country. And we do not want to see it go away, and we certainly are not going to go away quietly. And we will stand and fight. We are Americans.
Absolutely. My understanding is we have a caller on the line. His name is George, and he's calling from your state of Louisiana. I'll ask the operator to bring George on now. George, are you with us?
Yes, I am.
What is your question for the good Reverend?
Hey, George, how you doing, man?
Pretty good, Phil. You doing okay today?
Doing the best I can.
Good, good. Well, I just wanted to chime in on this deal about the president.
George, are you there?
Yes, I'm here, Phil. Can you hear me?
We can hear you now.
Oh, can you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay. Well, that's the message that we need to get along to Obama and all his group is that, can you hear us now?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Jenny Beth Martin in the first Tea Party of the 9/12 March, that was her mantra on that day. She and Mark Meckler, of course, are the co-founders of Tea Party Patriots, who just got a nice sum of money from an anonymous donor, and that should help us all. But that is exactly the mantra, George. Can you hear us now? And, Mark, the one thing that George brings up is this, too. A year ago, and George was with me. I know this, George. George was with me in Washington, D.C. just a couple of weeks ago at this last 9/12 March. And no one, Mark, a year ago would have given us a prayer of having survived to see an anniversary this year. But there we were. And sure enough, the crowd wasn't as large as it was last year. But the beauty of it was this. We knew that there were other 9/12 groups having the same types of rally all over the country. St. Louis and Seattle are two that I know
that were going on that had massive crowds. And still, we had nearly 350,000 folks there in Washington, D.C., which was down from 1.5 million the previous year. But, of course, Beck had his, and that's great. And I understand that you have Jon Stewart, who's going to have a mock march coming up on the 30th of October.
I may have to show up and mock him at his march, if that's what mock march if that's what mock march means. Stewart is a guy who likes to brag that he became interested in Marxism while he was still a young man in high school. So factor that in as you evaluate Jon Stewart. But let me ask you this about the 9/12 rally. You were there for the first one. Beck was there, you know, 1.5 million people. In a group that large, my understanding, and since you guys were there, you can tell me, is that there was not one arrest. There was not one argument, one fight. Everybody got along as one gigantic, peaceful movement. Did you see anything, either of you, at this rally that would have been suggestive of racism or antipathy toward any particular race?
George, you were there.
Absolutely not. No, we didn't see anything that even represented anybody wanting to be racist. We were marching hand in hand, black and white and yellow and whatever. There was no hint of any racism. And I'll tell you something else, too. We left it cleaner than we found it. You didn't
Absolutely.
See paper and cups on the ground and all that stuff like you do when liberals have their marches.
Absolutely. There had been a rally the day before. We had the American Devotional on that Sunday morning, which was, talked and preached to, got a chance to preach to about 35,000-40,000 there in front of the Washington Monument. It was something that I, Matt Kibbe of the president of Freedom Works had put me over, Mark, and we preached to about 30,000 or 40,000 people that morning. And then we marched, but there had been a rally the day before, and they had left paper on the ground. We conservatives, and I must say it was a liberal type of rally that happened the day before, but we conservatives, we picked up their paper. We left that place, as George said, cleaner than it was. Go back to last year, 1.5 million people there last year. There, when we left there, it was as clean as anything. The Park Service commented on how clean we had left it. Were there any arrests? Absolutely not. Were there any unruly people there? Absolutely not. Did we have signs of people who were mad at the administration? Of course there were. But still, in this country, and that's what we're fighting to preserve, is the right to say what we want to say, associate with who we want to associate with, and go where we want to go. That's what America is all about. Being able to get in your vehicle, put gas in it, and drive anywhere you want to go, as long as your money holds out that you've earned.
Absolutely.
See, one thing that I have noticed in the last 20 years or so is that once we started doing away with God in schools and in public places and all these things, the liberals, progressives start taking over all our stopping our nativity scenes and all things like that. Things started going down from that point, and they've been going down ever since. What do you think about that?
I absolutely agree with you, George, on that point alone, because when we look at our Christmas, when we look at our Thanksgiving, our Easter, and then we look at all these other things like Ramadan, and we look at all these other things like Kwanzaa. Those things are wanting to push mainstream Christianity aside. And if that's what the One Nation Back to God.com movement is all about, we refuse to be pushed aside. Christians have defended the rights of other religions all around this world. And certainly here in perhaps the last bastion of a Christian nation, America, we must, if it is a last stand, then it will be a last stand, but we will stand. And we say to friends and foe alike, we refuse as Christians, whether that's Catholics or whether, let's say believers in God, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, the God of Jesus Christ, my personal Savior. Those who believe in God, we're sending this message that we refuse to be pushed aside and our personal rights to be trampled upon. And that's something that makes me righteously angry when I see Christians cowering down and pastors who will not speak up. There is a fire that must be blazed under pastors who are comfortable behind their four walls, but yet they sit by and watch our rights crumble and be dismissed.
Well, George, do you have any other questions for Reverend Brian?
Phil, did you see the textbook thing on TV about how many times Islam was in the textbook and how many times I think it was something like 37 times, and they only mentioned Christians one time.
Yeah, we're a footnote in textbooks. Christians are, in fact, Christmas is wanting to be, they're wanting to make that a footnote. But yet they're wanting to give credence to everything Islamic. And folks, let me tell you something. I'm no bigot. George knows I'm no bigot. Mark, I hope that we become friends and you'll know that I'm no bigot. But my thing is this, and this should be, if you're a Christian in this country, you need to say so. You need to make that known, because the enemies of Christianity are definitely saying so.
Absolutely, and this seems like a good segue into another question I had for you. Talk to me about your thoughts on the Ground Zero Mosque. What does this say about America that we have so many liberals standing up and defending their right to put a mosque a couple of blocks away, a mosque that is a sign of their victory, a couple of blocks away from what at one time was the World Trade Center?
How can we hate our country so much that we would actually allow them to dishonor a place where over 3,000 Americans lost their lives? How can a president be so spineless as to not take a stand and say, this will not happen? How can a mayor of that city, Bloomberg, say that he would be in favor of that when he has the survivors of those people living there in that city? I say that this mosque will never be built, because great Americans would need to lend them their labor and sell them the materials, I believe they would sit down. But if, in fact, this mosque is built on that site, or whether it's two blocks away from the site, if it's built in the shadow of that site, I say America has fallen. We have fallen.
What kind of a symbol do you think that would send to the Islamic extremists around the world if we were to allow this mosque to be built?
It would send a symbol to them that they have conquered the great Satan. They call us that. We know better. We're Christian people. We're a people. Listen, the very reason that I'm able to speak with you today, Mark, on this phone as a free man, is because of Christian principles. Some may say, well, Rome built the Vatican because it conquered, you know, Italy and all of that type of thing. That is absolute foolishness. The worship of God in this country has allowed Americans, whether they believe or not, that inalienable right, and that is freedom that our Creator gave to us. And it is Christian principles that defend the rights of other men, even though I may not agree with what you say. That is a Christian principle, to do unto others as you would have them do unto you. But in Islam, you have to yield and bow to the Islamic principle, Sharia law. And you become a second-class citizen under Sharia law if you are not a Muslim. And so, friends, whether you sit on the fence, whether you attend church, whether you don't attend church, whether you believe God or whether you don't believe God, it would be in your best interest to defend the Judeo-Christian principle that this country was founded upon.
One of the things that I find interesting is that although many people will label themselves, I am a Christian, I am a Catholic, I am a Jew, it seems to me that when it came to this last election in 2008, that was a nominal designation at best for many of these people, because you had over 50% of Jewish Americans voting for what has turned out to be one of the most anti-Semitic presidents of all time. You had over 50% of Catholics in America voting for one of the most pro-abortion presidents of all time. And
absolutely,
I think,
right, Mark. Excellent point. Go ahead. I'm sorry. Somebody was saying something.
No, I don't understand this. I'm looking to you for help, Reverend Bryant. Help me understand, and I know you're not a Catholic and I know you're not a Jew, but I help me understand how people that are pro-life, for example, would vote for this particular president given his voting history.
Let me give you a great for instance. And, of course, I have several Catholic priests as friends, and many of my friends around the country are Jewish. My Jewish friends say this about, especially the Messianic Jews, they will say this about those who are Orthodox Jews and vote liberal tickets. They are liberals first and Jews second. Because if you look into the history, even if you look at the biblical history of it, going back into the Old Testament, one of the troubles that the Jews always had was bending to authority or someone telling them what to do and how to do, not to be hedonistic. And when you look at Hollywood and places like that, places where many of our Jewish friends have made a lot of money, it is a very hedonistic society. And so they would rather vote liberal so that they can continue that type of pursuit than to vote conservative, where they would have some type of moral consciousness put in place. Also, African Americans, same way. Most of them, and this is not the stereotype, this is the reality, most African Americans are anti-abortion. They do not want abortion. Most African Americans are anti-homosexual, or let me say same-sex marriage. Most of them are against that. It's just part of the culture. However, the liberal agenda has encouraged, and if you go to Runaway Slave, the movie, or go to One Nation Back to God and see the movie on our website, onenationbacktogod.com, you can see the movie there. You will see very plainly that in 1960, they came around saying to the black women, we'll give you money for having these children, but now if you want to get married, you'll lose your benefits. And if you look at that documentary, the trailer for the documentary on onenationbacktogod.com, you'll also see that prior to 1960, when JFK, or 61 or 62, I think it was, when JFK had Martin Luther King released from a Selma, Alabama jail cell, most African Americans were Republicans. Why? Because of Lincoln, who freed the slaves. But after the release of King in 62, I believe it was, most African Americans were won to the Democrat Party by a burgeoning or a blossoming liberal agenda. And they have gotten to the point where they vote liberal rather than principle. And that is what we're trying to turn around. That's what's happening in this country. And unfortunately, a lot of young people, college-age people, you're there in College Station, college-age people are being sucked in to this very same mindset.
I couldn't agree with you more. In fact, I was thinking along the same lines when you mentioning all this of what the young people have forgotten. Reverend Bryant, have many of the young African Americans in this country forgot that it was once the role of the Ku Klux Klan to go around and ensure that African Americans voted for the Democrats?
It was their role. In fact, if they did not vote, if they weren't going to vote a Democrat ticket, then they would meet with some very harsh consequences. It was free people, free men, and Mark, one of the greatest things that I'm ever have a privilege to say roll off my lips is that I'm a free man. I associate with who I choose to associate with, not who they expect me to associate with. I go where I choose to go, not where they expect me to go. And I say, this is the true test of a free man in this country. I say what I want to say, and I say what's on my mind. And Mark, even though I know that you or I are on the same page, I will defend, even if you disagree with me, your right as a free man to say what you want to say, even if it is in abeyance or in disagreement to me. Now, this is what Al Sharpton, and this is what your Jesse Jackson and your race pimps many times hold over those who are still in bondage and over the young people who are still in bondage, because there are white young people and black and Latino young people who think that because we live in the MTV age and the BET age and whatever age, the Lady Gaga age, that there is a certain way that they should think. There's a certain way that they should talk, dress, and act. That is slavery, because whenever one of them decides to be something different, they are ostracized, and that is wrong.
Well, it reminds me of the old saying that liberals in America are very much for freedom of speech as long as you happen to agree with them.
Exactly.
Try disagreeing with them, and you'll find out how they truly do not support freedom of speech in America. Now, you've brought up something in the last few minutes that I want to touch on a little bit more, and that is that many African Americans in this country who are not part of the Tea Party movement agree fundamentally with many of the things that the Tea Partiers believe. The Tea Partiers are not for same-sex marriage, for example. The Tea Partiers do not want to see Christmas taken out of our vocabulary, for example. I mean, there are so many things. Why don't you highlight what you believe are some of the similarities between many African Americans and the core values of the Tea Party?
We were speaking earlier about Southern whites and Southern blacks, and the correlation can be made from that alone. We have a common history between us, and in the Tea Party movement, you have definitely a Southern flavor in the Tea Party movement. You have gentlemen, you have ladies, you have people who are genteel to each other. We are very much aware of other people's rights and other people's feelings, but we're very much aware now that if we don't stand up, our rights and our feelings will be taken away. Well, getting away from the stereotypes of the South and stereotypes of blacks, those feelings are across the board in the black community. Most African Americans, I'm not talking about the ones who are portrayed on television, because I'm of the mindset that even though they may call me an Uncle Tom or a minstrel or whatever they may call me, when I look at the black television shows on local television or cable or satellite TV here, all you see on there are caricatures of what they think and what they believe black black folks should act like. You see a minstrel show when you're watching those shows. Many of the great the movie makers in this country right now, when they put on a black character or a black actor, that guy is hired to be a minstrel and to portray a stereotype of what America, liberal America, want African Americans to be like. But when you go to the Tea Party movement, and Mark, if you look at how I am received among grassroots Americans, actually the American black that has evolved from slavery to where we are now, I pray God that I am the representative of what this country has wrought in the sons of former slaves. I pray that I am the representative of that, not the ones you see on television, because that is a caricature. I pray God that I am the one who is holding the banner of what America has brought forth, realizing that there was once slavery in this country, but yet I stand in front of the Washington Monument and in front of the White House, and I'm able to say as a free man, a free American, I am upholding the Constitution that has allowed me to do that, not the ones who are on television. And so when you correlate the Tea Party and you correlate true African Americans or black, and I really do hate to identify ourselves as colors, but it's just an evil that we still have to do away with in our country. But for the sake of conversation, when you look at most African Americans, hardworking people in this country, even hardworking farmers down here in my neck of the woods in Louisiana, a land that I love, and my homeland here in Louisiana where my people came from. And there are people in this area of my country who still work hard on farms and still want the very best for their family. And then when you – I'm talking about black people. And then when you look at hardworking white people, that is what the Tea Party has in common with everyday American and everyday blacks, and not the handouts that the government want to give us. You get out of our way here in the South, we've always proven to everyone else that we'll get what we need and we'll do what we need to succeed.
Amen. Amen, Reverend Bryant. I couldn't agree with you more. You brought up Hollywood, so let's talk about this for just a minute. During the last election, we saw a parade of Hollywood liberals coming out in favor of Barack Obama. We saw a parade of Hollywood liberals being themselves, using the F-bomb over and over again to go after John McCain and Sarah Palin. Why, as a nation, do our young people continue to worship what are nothing more than thugs?
Liberal media, if they're good at anything, Billy Graham, one of my icons, once said about Satan, he said, one thing I can say about the devil is that he's a good devil. He's good at his job. And that's what the liberal media is. They are very, very good at their job. But this is the thing that young people and liberal Hollywood types fail to see or recognize. If the Islamic threat does in fact take hold in this country, as it has in France and England and other parts of Europe, then their liberal agenda will be by law stymied. Because homosexuals are killed in most Islamic countries, and not only that, the arts, acting, if it's not Sharia compliant, if the arts are not compliant to Sharia law, they then are stymied in Islamic countries and Islamic situations. And so it puzzles me. Why, then, do they march against the very vehicle that has allowed them to become what they have become? They can believe it or not, it is the Judeo-Christian principle who allowed Hollywood to become what it is. It is because of freedom of speech, because of the great Constitution that we have, and because of the unalienable rights that our Creator God gave to us. But yet they attack the very vehicle that has allowed them to be free. And that's what One Nation Back to God is all about. It is about restoring sanity to people who have lost their minds and are defending Islam that would take away their very rights.
Let's take the last portion of this interview. Anyway, I guess we have about 10 more minutes, and I'm going to let you know a secret. I booked some extra time. But let's take the last portion of this interview and focus on the how-to. All right. As a white Tea Partier, I am frustrated by the fact that we do not see more African Americans, more Hispanics, more Asians at the Tea Party rallies, because I know many of them fundamentally agree with everything that's being said. Take us through the steps. What can we, as Caucasian members of the Tea Party, do to extend that invitation and to see that our population at these Tea Parties is more reflective of the population of America? How do we extend that invitation in a way that it will be accepted? Because the mainstream media has Hispanic America and has Black America convinced that if you go to a Tea Party, you're going to face racial heckling because these people do not like you.
Okay, my answer will be a paradox to you, Mark, and it will be because I'm going to answer you this way. For far too long, the liberal whites in this country have apologized from everything, from Columbus landing in San Salvador to affirmative action to what have you. They've apologized for everything. Mark, this is the message that I take with me around the country, and that is this. You and I are the product of the mistakes and the success of the past. Here we are in the year 2010, and our conversation is proof of it. The very nature of our conversation is proof of it. Americans do not have to bow down. We do not have to apologize for our history, because it is that turbulent history that makes us Americans. It is that turbulent history that is actually the crown, and even though it has sometimes been tarnished by awful atrocities that have happened in this country, but yet the spirit of that, I believe, divinely breathed document, the Constitution, even though it may not have worked from the outset, we were on its mind from the outset. And because we were on its mind, because it was written with me in mind, even though it may not have worked for me then, it has worked for me eventually. And that's what we must defend. But what we wind up defending many times, Mark, let me say what you wind up defending many times and what I wind up defending about you many times is the fact is that you many times turn this into defending your color. You can't help the fact that you're Caucasian no more than I can help the fact that I am white. If your parents were slave owners, you can't help that fact no more than I can help the fact that my parents or grandparents were slaves. But if Beck has brought to the forefront anything that is very important, and that is to remember the words of what King said. He longed and prayed and even risked and gave his life for the day when the sons of former slave owners and the sons of former slaves would sit down at the table of brotherhood. That day, Mark, with this phone call and with this blog talk that we're on here in the year 2010, and if I have anything good to say about the election of Barack Obama, a man of color, and I have a lot of things to say about other things, but I guess we won't go there today. But let's just say a man of color in this country, is that day has come. It has come. And so I believe that the best way to get African Americans into the Tea Party movement is to continue to be who and what we are. Don't cater to anyone, because they didn't cater to me to come become a part of that. I saw it for myself. I saw it because of my pocketbook. I saw it because of my principles. I saw it because of my Christianity. And if they are going to be truthful about this, no, we're not going to go out and round them up. I don't have to wear Christian stamped across my forehead for someone to know I'm a Christian. If you hang around me long enough, you're going to know that by watching the way I operate. And blacks, if Tea Partiers are true to themselves, true to the grassroots movement, then we don't have to recruit anybody. Just be who we have been. And as the old saying goes, build it, they'll come.
That was a good movie. I actually stopped seeing Hollywood movies a while back, but that was within the time that I still would go out and see one. We've still got a little bit of time left. I'd like to address one more subject. And, you know, we talk about the fact that the liberal media gave Obama a free pass on a lot of the baggage he was carrying with him throughout the election. But it seems to me that the liberal media does more than just give Obama a free pass. The liberal media gives other liberals a free pass when it comes to the issue of racism. Let me run a few things by you, and then I'll let you comment on them. Back in 1980 or so, Mike Wallace, while on 60 Minutes, was having a conversation with a banker about many African Americans and Hispanics who had lost their homes by taking out these home improvement loans. And during that conversation, when he thought the microphones were safely turned off, he said, yeah, but these contracts are a little difficult to understand if you're reading them over the watermelon or reading them over the taco.
Oh.
Yeah, and a lot of people have forgotten that, but that's stuck in my head. Even Johnny Carson made fun of it back then, and as if to imply that if you're African-American or you're Hispanic, you're not smart enough to understand the loan contract. Then, as recently as a few months ago, his old 60 Minutes buddy, Dan Rather, in reference to President Obama, said that Obama has good policies, but he doesn't know how to sell them. In fact, he said Obama's such a bad salesman, he couldn't sell watermelons on the side of the road if he had the state troopers to flag down the traffic for him. And I've got that on tape as well. We have seen Harry Reid talk about President Obama being a light-skinned African-American who doesn't have an accent, a black accent, unless he wants one. We've heard Barack Obama say that we've heard Joe Biden say that Barack Obama is America's first clean, good-looking, articulate black man, as if all other black men who came before him were inarticulate and not attractive and smelly. I mean,
right.
We have seen one racist comment after another. We see him from Hollywood. We see Madonna's former girlfriend, I'm sticking on her name, Sandra Bernhardt, say that if Sarah Palin went to New York, Sandra's big black brothers would gang rape her, as if whenever African-American males see an attractive Caucasian female, their first inclination is to rape her. We have heard nothing. We've heard Barack Obama say his white grandmother was a typical white woman. We hear these things over and over again, and yet the mainstream media does not call fellow liberals out on this subject. I would maintain to you, Reverend Brian, that it is not conservatives in this country who are racist. It is liberals.
Oh, absolutely right, Mark, and give you a case in point, a glaring case in point that you can add to your repertoire. Al Sharpton and Jesse Jackson have delivered more minority votes to the Liberal Party, the Democrat Party, than any other two people in this country historically since 1960s. Neither of them have ever been given or recognized for that achievement or a cabinet post, an ambassadorship, or any place of prominence in the Democrat Party. But they have been used as prostitutes for that length of time. And in turn, they have prostituted the black community to a party who treats them as second-class citizens. The statements that you have made historically, liberals have always regarded minorities, whether they're Hispanic, black, or women, as some type of ward. They need to be looked after. The words that I usually don't refer to, black leaders. Listen, where are the Italian leaders? Where are the Irish leaders? How come black people have to be led somewhere? How come you have to have black leaders? How come they can't be individuals just like everyone else in this country? I was saying to Judge Napolitano couple of months ago that people do not achieve or succeed as groups, as a group usually. People succeed or fail as individuals. And what has happened with this liberal agenda for the minority communities has been that they have tried to make them all succeed as groups. When obviously, if you're a homeowner and black and a landowner and black and you have a job that you've been on for 20, 25 years and black, as opposed to a person who is not a homeowner and black and does not care about working in black, then your interests are different. Your pocketbook is different, and hopefully your bank account looks different. So how can you lump those two different scenarios into the same voting block? It doesn't work. It'll be a miserable failure. The same way as an Italian or an Irishman or an Englishman or whoever in this country, my dad always said to me, son, vote your pocketbook.
And mine too.
That's the way you have to do it. That's the way you have to do it. But when you try to lump them into, lump anyone, any group of people into a group and cause and make say they're going to succeed as a group, that's a remedy or that's a recipe for failure.
I couldn't agree with you more. Once again, it sounds like our dads were. I got the vote your pocketbook thing a lot, and it seems like our fathers have raised us in very similar ways. Now, speaking of pocketbooks, you are doing a lot of fantastic work out there, but it takes money to make a documentary.
Yeah. I lost you, Mark. I'm not hearing you.
Group.
You're getting sort of an echo there, Mark. I'm not hearing you.
I'm sorry. Can you hear me now?
I hear you now.
Is it okay?
Okay. You're fading on me.
I'm sorry. Can you hear me, CL?
I'm there. I'm with you now. Yeah.
Okay. Fantastic. Sorry, we're having some technical difficulties today. I want to apologize to the listeners. But as I was saying, we were talking about voting your pocketbook. And speaking of the pocketbook, it takes money to run a nation to run a group like One Nation Back to God. It takes money to make a documentary film. Talk to the people about what they can do to get involved and help support these fantastic efforts that you're making.
We would certainly appreciate it if you would help us with this production by going to our website, onenationbacktogod.com, onenationbacktogod.com. You can make a tax-deductible donation to this film. Also, you can go on the web and just put in runawayslavemovie.com. and make a tax donation deductible, a donation that's tax deductible there. And Mark, I do thank you for allowing me to be on here today. I trust that everyone will get a chance to look at the trailer, the Runaway Slave movie, docu movie. And we plan to finish it in January. And then launch it in February. But I encourage all Tea Partiers to just remain who you are, be who you are, and who we have been over this last year and a half. And pray God will bless America.
Reverend Bryant, a wonderful way to close the show. Thank you so much for being with us here today. I certainly hope this is not the last time we get to visit with you. And I would encourage all listeners, whether you're listening live right now, and we get a tremendous amount of listenership through the archive, when you are listening to this show live, Ionic about the runaway slave movie and Reverend Bryant, and you see the word donation down at the very bottom. That word is hyperlinked. If you click on the word donation, it will take you directly to the FreedomWorks page where donations are being collected for this movie. And I've already made a donation myself. I'm not a wealthy man, but I gave what I could, and I would encourage everybody today's archive 6 months from now. Click on that donation button that you see in front of you as you listen to the show, and please make a donation to this wonderful cause. Once again, Reverend Bryant, thank you for being with us today.
God bless and keep you, Mark. We'll talk to you next time.
Future guest, very soon. Thank you for being with us.
You've been listening to the Tea Party Power Hour with Mark Gillar, a production of the Conservative Broadcasting Network.